pure and utter domination from the Fighting Irish in the Indiana State Championship. Notre Dame advances to take on Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Is Notre Dame a national championship contender? All of that plus so much more in today's edition of the College Football Power Hour. The good news is, now that we are one game into the 12-team college football playoff, it can only go up from here. Welcome in. It's the College Football Power Hour. He's Adam Brenneman. I'm Jason. No, I'm not Jason Fitz. He's Jason Fitz. I'm Caroline Fenton. And that's exactly how maybe things felt for Indiana a little bit. You don't even know your own name. Had trouble moving the football. It was pure and utter domination, really, for a majority of 60 minutes from Notre Dame. Notre Dame ran the ball much better than Indiana did against this vaunted, top-ranked Indiana defense. Indiana's offense really could not get anything going. Anytime Indiana felt like they were maybe getting just a little bit of momentum, Notre Dame's defense just completely stuffed them. Despite a little bit of a late game surge, Notre Dame wins. Notre Dame dominates. Notre Dame will advance to play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Adam, the narrative coming out of this game is, well, Indiana shouldn't have even been there in the first place, that the College Football Playoff Committee needs to take a long and hard look at the strength of schedule and who you play and who you beat. Is that fair coming out of this game? Is that the right narrative?
It's a ludicrous narrative. The argument that I'm hearing on social right now is that the committee should have left out an 11-1 Big Ten team that has the number one scoring margin in the country, the number one or two scoring offense, and the number one rush defense in the country. That's what people are throwing out there. You make the playoff for what you do before Selection Sunday. What happens after Selection Sunday doesn't dictate whether you should have been in the playoff or not. So any talk about Indiana not deserving to be in the playoff, I think, is crazy. And listen, Indiana didn't play their best today. And I think they played one of the top two or three teams in the country. I think they played a team in Notre Dame that's going to play in the national championship game. So, listen, Indiana deserved to be here. Let's not take anything away from what Indiana did in one of the more remarkable turnarounds in 1 year that we've seen in recent college football history, and the season that Curtis Rourke had and what Kirk Cinetti did in year one flipping that roster. It was incredible. But Indiana needed Curtis Rourke to be at his very best to win this game, and they didn't get his very best. Indiana also needed their defense and their tackling to be at their very best to have a chance in this game. They were not good. They certainly weren't their best. And ultimately, that's what led to Notre Dame blowing them out.
Okay. I agree with what you're saying about what the narrative is. I think by the end of this weekend, and look, this is, as we tape this, this is late Saturday night or late Friday night. This could all change tomorrow. I don't believe it will. Yeah. I think the narrative by the end of Saturday night is going to be that there aren't 12 quality playoff teams. Guys, this was exactly what I expected. I think my official prediction was that they would lose by 17 in this game. Obviously, some trash points at the end changed that. I wasn't surprised by anything in the outcome. I do think that what we have to acknowledge is that we love the concept of playoff games, but that doesn't mean they're all going to be good playoff games. I think there's a real chance that all three games tomorrow end up being slaughters. I could see that happening. I think Tennessee, Ohio State's the only game that I think even has any hope of being close. So the narrative when we come out of all of this, over the course of the next week and a half, a lot of people are going to be yelling, do we even need 12 teams in the college football playoff? My answer to that is yes, because everybody was sitting here flocking to watching a Friday night game in Notre Dame. Like, let's not let the outcome change how special the actual experience was. We got playoff football at Notre Dame on a Friday night, snowy atmosphere. Like, this is what college football is meant for. It's just, unfortunately, it was a bad matchup for Indiana out of the gates. It was not strength on strength. It was a bad, everything about this worked the wrong way for Indiana coming in, and then they didn't play their best game.
But I disagree. I think this was a great matchup for Indiana. On paper, at least, in theory, at least, a Notre Dame team whose offense is completely predicated on the run, on running the football, running the ball with your quarterback, and then you're going up against an Indiana team that has the best run defense statistically in all of college football. At least on paper, I thought that matched up perfectly for Indiana. I think that at the end of the day, the difference was Notre Dame has 4 stars and 5 stars and physicality and strength and a level of talent that Indiana just doesn't have this year. So maybe that's the matchup that I'm looking at here, is just you've got a Notre Dame team that has so much more talent, so much more star power than an Indiana team does.
But that Notre Dame pass defense is built to stop what Indiana does.
That's
like
fair. Yeah.
So I agree with you that we can look at the run defense, but the back end of that Notre Dame defense, I use this phrase a lot, but those are grown-ass men. Those are adults playing in the back end of that Notre Dame defense. I wasn't surprised at all to see them shut down the Indiana passing attack, which we knew was already, like, the weather and possibly the snow and the moment, and the environment was all that kind of slow it down. I also think we have to just credit here that Notre Dame's defense was absolutely ready for everything Indiana threw at them.
Yeah, Fitz, to your point, Notre Dame's defense was elite in this game, and I thought that their plan was perfect for how you play Indiana. Notre Dame, the entire game, had 6 and 7 guys in the box to stop the run. The entire game. They were at one high safety with their second safety in the box, especially on early downs. But Indiana had 6 guys to block 7 consistently in the run game. So what happens, Indiana can't run the football. So your receivers have to win one-on-one when that happens. Your receivers have to win. And what happened for Indiana is the receivers couldn't separate. They couldn't beat press coverage. Notre Dame's defensive backs were too physical and too big in man coverage. When you get man-to-man, someone has to win. What also happens is that you don't have time to throw the football because you got 7 guys in line of scrimmage. So you better win quickly or else Curtis Rourke doesn't have time. And that's what happened when his receivers didn't win one-on-one. The most important and maybe the most glaring part to me was the poor plan Indiana had on offense for how they're going to beat one-on-one man-to-man coverage with not a lot of time. What you do when you get man-to-man coverage like that is you run rub routes, you run stack formations, you run pick routes to rub the defenders so you get your guys open, even if you don't have the matchups to win, which I still think Indiana should have, where they could beat some of those guys one-on-one. You create the matchups, you create the win with the rub, with the pick routes, with the slants, with those man beaters, and Indiana didn't use them. I couldn't figure out why they weren't helping their receivers separate. Instead, they relied on isolated pass routes, which Notre Dame's defensive backs easily locked down. So I thought their plan was really good. And listen, beating this Notre Dame secondary one-on-one is easier said than done. But I thought all the way around, Notre Dame had a great plan. And I was kind of shocked by how Indiana failed to take advantage of any of those one-on-one matchups.
Yeah, and I do wonder how much that narrative about Indiana, and those all great points by you, Adam. I do wonder how much that narrative about Indiana may change if Notre Dame has a very similar defensive performance against Georgia that they did tonight. Because Indiana all season long has been averaging 43 points a game. They put up, 17 against Notre Dame. They've been averaging 440 yards per game. They put up 275 against Notre Dame. They've been terrific on third down. They've been just around 50% on third down. They were 4 of 12 on third down. I think that's partly Indiana just being overmatched. And a massive part of that is Notre Dame's defense is so much better than I think the general public of college football fans gives them credit for, because they haven't been doing it on a national stage against top 25, top 15, top 10 teams on a week in, week out basis. If Notre Dame's able to do that against Georgia, which, look, we've seen good defenses limit what Georgia can do offensively, especially if they're without their starting quarterback, Carson Beck. If Notre Dame goes out and limits Georgia to 17 points and 275 yards like they did against Indiana, maybe, probably not, because some people just like to hate, but maybe, just maybe, the narrative turns and it's just Notre Dame's actually a really good football team, Fitz.
But I also say that, because everything you just said makes so much sense, what's happening right now in the immediate reaction of Notre Dame is confirmation bias. And like, that's a legal term we use all the time when, like, we come in and it's like, you see something and it's like, well, I already thought this confirms it. Because to the point, if we're really going to sit here and say, who have they played? Could we not say the exact same thing for the most part about Notre Dame? I mean, can we not just go up and down the list? Texas, we can say that. Penn State has not had the toughest schedule. Sorry, Adam. Like, we go up and down the list. Whoever underperforms in week one of the playoffs, it's going to be like, well, you know, but who'd they play all year? I think what's happening right now is this shocking reaction to watching Indiana get their butts kicked, knowing that the 2 times they played real teams, they weren't in either of those games this year. And that's the jarring part of who did they play that people are going to sort of plant their flag to. But let's be honest, I think you could apply that to a ton of the teams in this college football playoff.
I agree. You could apply it all across the board. But I've been on the Notre Dame hype train for a long time. I was on it after they lost to NIU. I think Notre Dame is a legitimate national title contender. I put out my playoff predictions. I have Notre Dame losing to Oregon in the national title game.
Ooh, so do
Notre Dame. Notre Dame has the defense that can lead them to a national title, without a doubt. And that is the most important piece. Everyone wanted to get on me for picking Notre Dame over Georgia on social media. Now I'm seeing they're favored against Georgia in that game in New Orleans. This is a bad draw for Georgia. This is not who Kirby Smart wants to play in this game. This game's going to be a thriller in New Orleans. Notre Dame faithful are going to be in New Orleans for this one. And I've mentioned this before on the show, but if I was comparing this to something, it would be the first year of the four-team playoff when Ohio State lost to a super average Virginia Tech team, just like Notre Dame lost Northern Illinois. Then Ohio State went to New Orleans and beat the piss out of Alabama, just like Notre Dame is about to beat the piss out of Georgia in New Orleans in the game in 10 days. So it feels very similar to that, and I think Georgia's sitting here right now not happy that Notre Dame won this game. Notre Dame matches up really well with a Georgia team that doesn't have their starting quarterback.
Think about what you said, too, Adam. Like, think about what you said earlier about this Notre Dame defense. Like, this Notre Dame secondary can lock up one-on-one, and they're going to be going against a team that led the nation in drops. A bunch of wide receivers that already have some sort of the yips, like again, with the backup quarterback, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to stack that box, and they're going to threaten Georgia to run. Like, again, this just feels like a bad, on paper to me, it feels like this is a bad matchup for Georgia.
Yeah. If Notre Dame does just to absolutely pummel Georgia, there's going to be a whole lot of not very Catholic things happening in the city of New Orleans after that game. I mean, my goodness.
Let me add one more thing here about the game. This absolutely confirmed that the first round should be played at home. You cannot recreate that home environment. You should play the entire playoff at home and then play the national title in the Rose Bowl. What we saw at Notre Dame was epic. The fact that, I mean, I had chills when they played the national anthem, that the intro on ESPN ABC I thought was really cool. That's what it's all about. I mean, this was a great move by whoever the heck made this, made the first round playoff games at home. Do the whole darn thing at home and then play the championship game in the Rose Bowl. And it'd be perfect.
Shout out to Notre Dame, as I learned from Mike Golic Sr. And I think Reese Davis may have mentioned this too. Over a year ago, when the initial college football playoff schedule was released and they knew that this would be a possibility of games, they changed their entire academic schedule to make finals a week later so that they would ensure more kids would be on campus in case they had a home Friday or Saturday playoff game. Like, Notre Dame went in and said, you know what? We're going to shift our entire academic year to make sure we're around for the college football playoff. And that paid off. Adam, you're right. And we'll keep planting this flag over and over and again. Every one of these games being at a site. God, I mean that. And then you want to talk about making every game during the regular season even more meaningful. How much we'd be screaming and yelling at a committee for where they rank teams. Home field advantage, not just for one round. The next round of the playoffs is going to feel so sterile after what we're seeing this weekend that absolutely college football has to fix.
Empty stadiums we're going to get next round. It's not going to be fun.
I think just having it at home obviously is awesome. But it's also the idea that I think is one of my big themes coming out of this first 12 team playoff is it seems like the best teams in the country are getting incentivized with a punishment. Like Oregon, congratulations, you're undefeated. Now you get either Ohio State or Tennessee. It's the same thing of like thinking about a home playoff game in Athens, Georgia makes me so excited. But oh, nope, Georgia won their conference championship game, so they don't get a home playoff game. That's another reason and another data point to add to your argument, Adam, is these first round bye, I think, will prove to be invaluable in the college football playoff, but not getting the excitement and that true home field advantage that obviously Notre Dame got tonight. I think there's going to be two things that we learn at the end of this college football playoff. One, getting home field advantage if you do play in the first round, invaluable. But what is even more valuable than that is absolutely, obviously, a first round bye. I think we're going to start to see that come to fruition as we get a little bit further on into the playoffs. But Adam, my question for you, because I'm with you now, I'm riding the Notre Dame bandwagon a little bit more, and that's obviously very much so recency bias since we have seen one whole game in the college football playoff, but their defense is championship worthy. If Notre Dame does not win a national championship, it will be because of what?
Notre Dame's offense still gives me some concerns. I mean, Indiana's defense didn't play bad in this game. I mean, you think about how the game really played out. I mean, if Indiana was going to have a shot in this game, they needed to get out and start fast. And they did, causing a Riley Leonard interception on the first Notre Dame drive. I mean, Indiana had momentum in this game multiple times. Then at halftime, 17-3 at halftime, and Indiana got stops against Notre Dame and Riley Leonard. I mean, they got multiple stops, forced a punt, forced a field goal. Then Notre Dame missed a field goal. They got stops in the red zone. And I thought there were times where Notre Dame's offense stalled on critical third downs and in the red zone. Too many field goals, too many missed opportunities down there. So I think if they don't make a national title game, it'll be because their vertical passing game failed them. It'll be because at some point they're going to have to win the game throwing the football. Everything Notre Dame does on offense right now revolves around their run game. They are not drop back pass specialists. Riley Leonard never drops back to throw the football. It is all quick game, or it's play action, or it's a rollout type boot where he has the option to run the football. And they spread the ball around. But at some point against one of these elite teams, that's not Indiana, Notre Dame's going to have to throw the football down the field. And my question is whether Notre Dame has the receivers and whether Riley Leonard can stand in the pocket and deliver the ball in a situation. The hardest time to throw the football is when everyone knows you have to throw the football. That's when it's hard to throw it. And can they do it when everyone knows they have to throw the football? Because against Indiana, they only threw it when it wasn't a passing situation, when no one knew if they're going to throw it, when they could run those play action plays. Great question.
Yeah, and Adam, the other thing that really hits me about the vertical, and it's the downfield passing, I think, that we really are all scared of here. Part of it is just, is Riley comfortable taking those shots? And that, I just don't think we know that. Like, is he comfortable, even if he's got a guy, is he comfortable throwing it down the field? Because if he doesn't, when he faces a great defense, especially a great defense on the edge that won't let him get out and run around. In the second half, he was getting out and run around so much. That's fine. He was buying himself time. It was fun to watch. That's great athleticism. But, man, he's going to have to let things fly on time at some point, and they're going to have to take some shots, or everybody's just going to shrink the field. And I think that speaks to some of what you talked about, you know, red zone. They're just going to have to find a way to take deep shots in the game just so that somebody takes it seriously. And I don't know if Riley is comfortable just making it heave like that. So I think that's going to be really interesting to watch.
And the final point on that, Fitz, is that also this Notre Dame offense, I really feel like is at its best when Riley Leonard's used a bunch in the run game. And he didn't have to run it a ton against Indiana tonight, but against Georgia, look out for a Riley Leonard 23 carry type of game, where he's carrying the football. And that obviously opens them up to what no one wants to talk about. A lot of hits, possible injury. You know, what goes on there? When your quarterback's getting hit 20 times a game, which I think we will see in the next couple rounds of the playoff, they're going to have to hope he stays healthy.
And that brings up another Riley that's in question. Riley Mills, their leading sacker, went down with an injury, did not return in the second half. That's a big swing for me as well that we haven't touched on quite yet, is I think Notre Dame's defense can carry them to a national championship. I don't know if Notre Dame's defense can carry them to a national championship if Riley Mills is not part of that conversation. So at the time they were recording this podcast, we literally hopped on right when the game went final. So no update on Riley Mills quite yet. We might get something from Marcus Freeman either tonight or over the next couple of days heading into the Sugar Bowl. But that's going to be a huge swing and a huge loss for this defense if he's not able, knock on wood, of course, to be able to come back at least for the Sugar Bowl, if not for the rest of the playoff. We'll take a quick break here. Powerhouse, power outage coming up next. I also just saw this tweet from Lane Kiffin, our personal favorite Twitter fingers Twitter warrior.
What'd he say?
He quote tweeted like a Notre Dame football graphic that's a touchdown Riley Leonard. And he said, really exciting competitive game at CFB playoff. Great job. Hey, Lane, don't lose to Kentucky. And maybe you could have been there. Maybe you're not tweeting on your couch and you're actually coaching or preparing for a playoff game. I don't know. Crazy thought.
I do think that Kirk Cinetti started to rub a lot of coaches the wrong way towards the end of the season. I mean, I could almost tell on game day that Nick Saban was getting a little annoyed with Kirk Cinetti being on there, like, you know, being all cocky. So I bet Lane Kiffin and all his SEC coaches just like hate Kirk Cinetti. They think he's so annoying. They're probably so happy to see him lose in this game.
Oh, I bet. I bet. Lane's like, there's only space for one coach who's kind of a D-bag, and yeah, it's yeah. me.
It's only him.
Only me. Only yeah. I can live in that real estate. All right. On the Power Hour, we're going to pick our powerhouse. Adam, your powerhouse for Notre Dame, Indiana.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Mike Denbrock, Notre Dame offensive coordinator. I think I'm going to holistic picture what Mike Denbrock has done the last couple of years in college football and the impact he's made. I mean, he came from LSU, was the offensive coordinator for your team, Caroline, and totally transformed Jaden Daniels into
so
a
fun.
Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. I mean, what he turned Jaden Daniels into was remarkable. And Daniels left Arizona State, turned into this superstar, now NFL superstar, really in a quick period of time under Mike Denbrock. Now, Riley Leonard looks like a completely different quarterback than the one we saw at Duke last year under Mike Denbrock's leadership. I mean, his ability to be used in the run game, how well he throws the ball on the run, his pocket awareness. I still have concerns about Riley Leonard throwing the ball on the field, but that's because we haven't really seen it. They haven't had to do it. But one of the things Mike Denbrock's the best at is getting his guys to play confident and getting his guys to play their best in their biggest moments. And I thought Riley Leonard's done that all season long. I mean, he's played well in the biggest games and has made plays happen, has taken care of the football most importantly. And I thought Marcus Freeman's quote before the game, they asked him about Riley Leonard on the sideline. He goes, I guarantee you his best is good enough for us to win every week. And I think that's true. And Mike Denbrock is getting Riley Leonard to play his best right now.
Add Desmond Ridder into that conversation as well. Obviously, yeah, Desmond Ridder is not the NFL star that Jaden Daniels has become in the NFL.
Yeah.
Going way back to Cincinnati. I mean, Mike Denbrock got Cincinnati to the four-team college football playoff. Yeah. Like, he is a proven quarterback developer. And you bring up how we could see a Riley Leonard 23-25 carry at some point in the college football playoff. Well, that's exactly what we saw with Jaden Daniels under Mike Denbrock last season. So great point by you.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit step further on this and say, I think if we're looking at the powerhouse in this game, it was the Notre Dame rushing attack. And I'll credit their offensive line a lot in that, too. Like, that 98-yard touchdown run, as much as we're going to continue to see the replay, we're going to talk about Love running 98 yards. Let's also talk about the pull on that block that gave him just so much space to get through. Like, it was a beautiful thing. It was alarming to see that, you know, second and six was turning into first down. Like, it's funny, Adam, I think a lot about what you said on one of our earlier episodes this year about, like, sometimes the key isn't third down conversion. It's not getting into third downs. And early in this game, I thought it was pretty remarkable to see how 4 yards, 5 yards, a clip was something that was really doable on the running attack. So, you know, against particularly Indiana and that rush defense, which I did have some respect coming in for, I think the fact that they didn't have to rely just on Riley, they were able to run the football with their backs. They were able to run the football patiently. Their offensive line was able to run the football really well. Like, the powerhouse of this game to me was sort of domination physically up front running the ball.
I'll add on to your powerhouse there, Fitz. How about the Jeremiah Love Heisman campaign in 2025? I think we're going to be they put the foot on the gas on the Heisman campaign tonight with that 98-yard touchdown run, which was blocked beautifully. I thought he was going to get hawked at one point. If he would have gotten hawked on that, he would have never lived it down from his boys. Would have never heard the end of it. But I think the Love Heisman campaign will be something we hear about all offseason.
We're throwing a couple bucks on it. I mean, today those odds are what? Probably 10,000 to one. So
plus
why
10,000?
Not? Yeah,
we'll
why
take
not? I think that's also a great example of what we kind of talked about going into the playoff of this feels like a playoff of running backs, a playoff of running the football, since there's not really that one quarterback really in all of college football, minus Cam Ward, but especially in this playoff field, not one quarterback that really stands out above the rest. And all of these teams lean on the run. We're going to see it tomorrow in Ohio State against Tennessee on both sidelines. We've seen it with Penn State and their two-headed monster with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. And obviously we saw it with Cam Scadaboo at Arizona State and most notably Ashton Gentry at Boise State. Like, you can go through every single team in the college football playoff and say, if they can't run, they can't win. And Jeremiah Love kind of put that on full display and really just breathed so much life and so much electricity under that Notre Dame sideline early on in that game. Can't have a powerhouse without a power outage. Fitz, power outage might feel a little obvious in this one.
No, I'm going to go right back to Cignetti, actually, as we're talking about this. Like, The broadcast pointed out in the second half when they were down big and they chose to punt the ball away from virtually midfield. No, no. Like, what are we doing? And then you see the way the score actually turned out. Now, it took a miracle with an onside kick and all these things, but you do have to look back at this game and say, man, there were two or three opportunities to be aggressive. And it really felt like at times, as much as we talk about players getting tight, kind of felt like Indiana was being coached tight in that second half early on. So I think power outage goes to the very confident, and rightfully so, Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah, I love Kurt Cignetti, but I was shocked at how he managed part of this game. Listen, you don't get to talk all that kind of crap. I almost swore for the second time on the show today. You don't get to talk all that crap this year, and including on game day before the game, and then you run the ball on third down and 12 at the 50-yard line. You kick a field goal to turn a two-score game into a two-score game, and then you punt the ball in the fourth quarter and basically give up the game at that point. Notre Dame holds the ball, as you said, Fitz, for what, 5-6 minutes after that? I mean, and have some awareness of how the game's going. Don't punt the ball down, what were they, down three scores at that point, to a Notre Dame team that you can't stop. So I thought Kurt Cignetti, for as cocky and as outgoing and as confident as he is, I didn't think he coached like it tonight. I was surprised by some of those decisions.
The final few minutes of the game, when Indiana scored to make it a two-score game, 27-11, when they went for the two-point conversion, got the onside kick, scored again. That was all in the span of three, four, five minutes in game clock. I asked myself, where was this Indiana team all game long? Like, now you're feeling a serious sense of urgency. And even when they did recover the onside kick, it still felt incredibly far out of reach. Even the broadcast was like, you know, hey, it might be one in a million chance, but you're still a little bit of a chance. Like, where was that all game long? If we saw that kind of aggressiveness from Indiana, I still think Notre Dame wins this football game, but it's a much more intriguing game than we saw, Fitz.
Yeah, and that comes back to what we always say, like, in these situations, when you know that, you know, it's a David and Goliath situation, sometimes you got to be more aggressive. You got to take chances. You got to really send a message. And I think, as Adam pointed out earlier, too, in the very beginning, there were a couple of moments where Indiana was seizing momentum, and I kept waiting for pace, for a shot, for something that he's like, hey, where's this big, like, moment we're going to capitalize? We've landed a couple of punches here. When are we going to go for some big uppercut? And it just never happened. It never came together. So I think the entire thing just lacked that spark that we've sort of associated with Indiana throughout the course of the year. And this is the sort of part of the conversation that will carry over. Like, as much as this is just one moment, this performance and the performance for Ohio State is going to carry over into the way that Indiana is perceived next year. These are the moments that Cignetti is even going to have to grow from, and he's going to have to make sure that it sort of proves to the world that that doesn't define who he is in these big games.
Yeah, there were moments in this game where Notre Dame's lack of offensive explosiveness kept Indiana in this thing when they shouldn't have been. With how bad Indiana was playing on offense, Notre Dame's offense should not have been letting Indiana stay in this game. But this game was an ideal game script for Notre Dame. If they just script it up, this is how they would have had it go. The game was never in doubt after it was 14-0 because of how elite their defense is. It almost felt non-competitive at times. Like, it almost felt like there was no chance Indiana was going to come back because of how bad their offense was playing and how good Notre Dame's defense was playing. There were no moments in this game where I truly felt Indiana was a threat. There were no moments where I thought Indiana can score at any moment right now. And then especially when Notre Dame threw in the towel when Indiana threw in the towel down 20-3 to punt with 10 minutes to go. I mean, it was over. Notre Dame held Indiana to 24 minutes time of possession in this game. That is how you win a home, cold playoff game in South Bend. That's the script. That's the script. And Notre Dame executed it perfectly.
I kind of want to put a bow on this conversation with looking back on the season for Indiana. Like, obviously the conversation is going to be Indiana's no good and they shouldn't have been here, which is an incorrect statement and I think a completely unfair narrative. And obviously Notre Dame, Georgia, and the rest of the second round playoff games are going to dominate our conversation next week, and rightfully so. But this was a Cinderella season by every single meaning of the term for Indiana. And Kurt Cignetti did it so much by getting players in the transfer portal that had 4 or 5, even 6 years of experience in college football. Adam, can Kurt Cignetti recreate this next season?
I don't think Indiana recreates the type of season they had this year. I think part of the reason is because of their quarterback, Curtis Rourke. You get a guy who's one of the best in the MAC from Ohio to come to Indiana and it kind of was like lightning in a bottle. This is going to be hard to recreate, without a doubt. Also, Cinetti benefited from being 1 year out of James Madison, where he could bring a bunch of transfers from James Madison that he had recruited, that he knew. Every year you're removed from your former school, you don't know as many guys, and you probably already got the guys that you want from the portal, so there won't be that batch of players to bring in. And then you're back at square one with quarterback, and they kind of hit it perfectly with Curtis Rourke. So, listen, I think Indiana is going to be a premier program in the Big Ten for a long time now. Indiana's investment with NIL is one of the best in the Big Ten. I mean, almost up there with, like, Penn State and some of those programs. So, Indiana's not going anywhere, but listen, I mean, an 11-1 season, top scoring margin in the country, top rush defense in the country, that's hard to recreate. But I don't want to take away from what Kirk Cinetti's done this year, because it's almost unfathomable how he turned this place around so fast. No one would have believed you. And I bet we'll see pretty soon off season, you know, total over under on win total for Indiana. I'd say it's probably at like 8 next year for their win total. So I think they'll have a good season. It's going to be tough to recreate this special of a year.
Yeah, especially because quickly I will note they go at Oregon and at Penn State next year.
They're not as lucky as this year, right?
Yeah. They do not play Ohio State next year. It looks like they don't get Ohio State, but they are at Oregon. They're at Penn State. They have Wisconsin, Michigan State at home. We'll see who those guys look like, you know. So they go to Iowa. So, I mean, it's you never know with the Big Ten, but the two big ones, Oregon and Penn State, I think are going to change the tone of this conversation. I always want to see it a second year because I have Mel Tucker stuck in the back of my head. Like, we saw one great year at Michigan State, and then it all went straight to hell, right? So I want to see it year two, but I also think, to the point that Adam's made, the infrastructure right there is so good. 8 wins feels about right for Indiana. The most important thing is that Indiana football is relevant. Whether they're a playoff team or not, they're relevant, and they're going to remain relevant for years to come, I think.
And if Indiana follows up an 11-1 season with a trip to the college football playoff with an 8-win season, I think you can chalk that up as a win. Not every year in Indiana is going to be an 11-win season with a trip to the college football playoff. If you're able to find at least some resemblance of consistency and consistently winning games and consistently being over 500 and consistently being comfortably over 500, like that's shifting the program in like seismic ways that we haven't seen in a long time at the Indiana football program. So a Cinderella season for Indiana cut short by Notre Dame. They'll go on to play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. We have more college football games coming up tomorrow on Saturday. So we'll be back here on Sunday morning with a full reaction to all of the action on Saturday. Adams, Penn State, Nittany Lions taking on SMU. I'm sure you're going to be very calm, cool, collected. No swear words, no sweating whatsoever.
I'm a little nervous. Listen. It just feels like too big of a spread for me right now. Everyone's kind of writing off that Penn State's got the easiest path. I'm nervous. I'm a little nervous.
A little scary.
Penn State by double digits.
A little scary.
Yeah, I like it, Fitz. I like your optimism.
I think it's going to be a comfortable one. But we'll have a full reaction on Sunday to all of the Saturday action. You can follow Adam on Twitter at AdamBrenneman81. He is at Jason Fitz, and I am at CarolineFenton1. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by the podcast. So like it, subscribe on your preferred podcast platform, on Yahoo Sports YouTube page, review it, always interact with the podcast. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by. Again, we're back on Sunday, so tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell Lane Kiffin, tell Kurt Cicnetti. We'll be back on Sunday. We are out.